From America's frontier, Nebraska, it's time for the Outdoor Connection, brought to you by TJ and the crew from the Minnow Bucket in North Platte. The Minnow Bucket, for all your hunting, fishing, and outdoor needs. Stop in today at 1013 South Jeffers in North Platte. Here's your host of Husker Radio's Outdoor Connection, Rick Windham.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Outdoor Connection. I got a special story for you today. A lady that's from here in town, Rogene Einspar, and we'll let her tell her story, but she had some very unique circumstances leading up to her elk hunt, and she did get an elk. So with that, I'm going to welcome you to the show. How are you this morning, ma'am?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Very good, and thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
We'll mention right now that you broke your leg and you're hobbling in here for this show. God bless you.
Yeah, it's my kneecap, you know, that I broke in an accident.
Automobile accident, yes.
So hunting was a little bit different this year. First of all, I had RSV, and the 27th, I think, was the first that I got to go out to even try to hunt.
Okay.
Because I had been, both my husband and I had been down with the RSV. And so my son took me out hunting, and we hunted a number of different places, you know, and we would see some or we would call some, but they were always on the other side of the fence,
yep,
where we didn't have permission.
Well, you're following good ethics and the rules. Let's back up a little bit. When did you start hunting? Do you mind if I tell people how old you are?
No, I don't mind.
According to the email I had, you're 70 years old.
That's right.
You don't look 70.
Oh, okay. Yep, I am the 70-year-old woman who's kind of crazy to put in for an elk permit this year.
Again, God bless you. Keep going.
But no, we started hunting deer down in Cottonwood Canyon with my dad, Alfred Gosnell. And we started hunting deer, him and my Uncle Herman. We would go out in the Jeep and we would you know, look for deer. Back then, we didn't have all the trees, and so you could see the deer better.
Right.
And we hunted, and my dad hunted until I think he was 80-some years old, you
Good
know.
For him.
And then
I hope I'm doing that at 87.
Then in high school, I started getting a permit, and then I introduced my fiance, who's my husband now, to hunting, and we all hunt. When our son got old enough, he hunted, and now we've got three grandchildren that are old enough that hunt. The fourth one goes along, but he's not old enough yet.
Oh, well, he'll get there.
Yes,
get
yes.
There. Now, you off air we were talking, and you mentioned a story about the one year you got three deer.
Yeah.
So I want to hear that one.
That's kind of a unique story. Yes, I was coming home from school, and on the way home on Friday evening, about 5 miles from home, a deer jumped out in front of me, and I hit it with my car, mm-hmm, and it incapacitated my car, so we had to walk to the neighbors and get my dad to come pick me up. Then we hunted on Saturday. Saturday night, we went back to Holstein, Nebraska, to a wedding, and I got proposed to that night and got a diamond, so that was my second deer. We came back out hunting.
And of course, the future husband came along with that.
Right. And then on Sunday, then, I actually shot my deer. So
that is a very unique story. I like that one.
Yep, three deers in one weekend.
So through high school, you hunted. And then what intrigued you about hunting? Why did you want to hunt?
Well, it was a family deal. We all got together, you know, the night before, and, you know, all the stories and the plans and all that we were going to do. And it was, you know, it was just fun. It was the excitement of locating the deer, of, you know, the hunt. It's just the excitement of all of it.
I think that has a lot to do with it. And then you also mentioned with the family, it's that becomes an event that you look forward to every year.
Mm-hmm.
It's the camaraderie, the stories you mentioned.
Yes, yes.
My deer camps never have any stories.
Oh, no, I'm sure. You know, and then, you know, after the hunt, the, you know, retelling the story exactly how it happened and how this, you know, happened and all those things. That's what makes it fun.
Two of the gentlemen that are in my camp routinely are their identical twin brothers are now 91 years old.
Oh, wow.
And we tease them constantly about, you know, when they were young and started hunting, you know, flintlocks were the thing. Just constantly tease them about that. But a lot of good stories come out of those camps. So, now, what is your most memorable hunt? I mean, this one's got to be pretty good.
This one probably will be down in my mind because that it was pretty good. But I don't know. I think probably the first year I went hunting with my brother, and he had a 243 that he let me shoot.
Good choice.
And I think that probably was. We were sitting on one side of the pocket or hill, and the deer was kind of over on the other side, and I kept saying, no, I think it's too far. And he said, Sish, you can do it. Just pull the trigger.
Good for him. 243 is a very capable rifle, and out to, you know, what a lot of people would consider long shots, 400, 500, 600 yards, it's very capable.
I started out with 243. I went to a 6mm, and now I'm shooting a 264.
Now, there's one you don't see very often. 264 Winchester Magnum.
Yep.
You got it in a classic Model 70 as well?
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Oh, we got to get to school now. The 264 Winchester Magnum was, you've heard the term belted magnums.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first belted magnum that Winchester produced. And then they moved up and produced the 300 and then so forth up to the 458. But that's a classic rifle.
Well, my husband, before he was my husband, he got that rifle, and I think it was in the 60s that he got that rifle.
That they came out in 1959, so he has one of the early ones.
Yep.
And if it's what they refer to as a pre-64 Winchester, there were some changes in the way Winchester did stuff, and some of the purists think that anything made before pre-64 is a better Winchester than current one. That rifle is worth a good penny or two.
It's a good rifle. So
very nice. Now, when did you decide you were going to try to elk hunt this year?
Well, we, like a few days before it was time to have our applications in, I talked to my son, my husband, and I said, well, I think you guys should put in your elk permits. And Jamie says, well, you might as well too. And I says, oh, I don't know, I said. I'm not walking as good as I used to, because we used to do a lot of walking. I said, I'm not walking. He said, well, you might as well try. He said, I'll help you. He says, we'll get you an elk. And he didn't know what he was asking for.
Yeah, right. This is before things got complicated. The logistics got complicated.
Right, right. And then I got an email one day that I had gotten my application,
nice,
my permit. And then just a little bit later, we got the application that my husband got, a cow permit, and my son was out helping my husband spray musk thistle,
uh-huh,
and he got a cow permit.
Very
so,
nice.
I mean, this is unusual because we haven't had permits for 7, 8
oh, yeah,
years, you know. So
they're hard to come by.
Yes, yes.
I've been putting in for elk for a number of years, and I've yet to draw one.
Mm-hmm.
I know exactly
mm-hmm.
where I'm going to go if I do it. And
So we hunted. Well, we hunted in private property, and we hunted some of the public lands in Lincoln Frontier and Dawson County. So my son took me a lot of places. My husband went with me sometimes. But then I had the accident, and so it was 10 days then after I had the accident, car accident on the 8th of October. And it was 10 days before we went out again that I felt I could move.
I would imagine, yes.
I could move, and because I had problems with my shoulder and my kneecap, and of course, you know, bruised all over. But then my we went out and went hunting, and that was on, we went hunting on Monday and Tuesday, and we could see them. Well, some days we could see them, but we couldn't get, either couldn't get to them or couldn't get on the right place. I mean, I saw some big ones. We saw some nice big
Nebraska
ones.
Nebraska is raising some very quality elk.
Right. And the night before I got this one, we saw a nice big one right up the road on a pivot. But it was getting just about dark, and it was on property we didn't have permission on. So,
well,
so I had to let it go.
Yeah, and that is part of being an ethical hunter.
That's right. And I have my, you know, my son, my husband, we always, because we have grandkids that hunt, and you want to make sure that you do things right, that they learn the right way. So,
yeah.
So anyway, yeah, the morning that we went up, the day before, we had gone in and my husband had walked in a couple pivots and to see where tracks were and stuff in cornfields. And then the morning of the hunt that we drove by and we saw, my son said, I think that's a reflection of an elk in that water pit. And I said, how could you see that? Because it was hunting time, but you know, that those early hours, you know,
right.
It's, and then we came back by, and sure enough, you know, the elk was there, and it was reflection is what he saw.
Still day to keep that the water was that calm.
But behind him was kind of dark weeds and stuff, and so you couldn't really see, but you could see the reflection. So my son said, okay, he says, we'll go up the road here a little bit, I'll let you out, and you and Dad see if you can go down along the corn and see if you can get down to that fence line, because he had to be on the other side of the fence line for us to shoot.
Right.
I said, Jamie, I don't know if I can walk down there, because I'd been sitting in the back of the pickup with my leg straight out, you know, on the seat. I'm not in the back, but the back seat. And I said, I don't know if I can walk down there. He said, otherwise, walk down the road and then get over to the corn before you get down there. Well, when we got down there to the corner of the half section there, the bull had jumped the fence, and he was on the right side of the fence line.
Thank goodness, yeah.
But it was tall weeds in the fence line, and he was just kind of weaving in and out of those weeds, and you could see him, and then you couldn't, and you could see him, and you couldn't. He was just not going fast, but just kind of wandered up along there. Well, I could never get a clear shot, you know. And with cornfields on both sides, I knew I had to have a good shot or he would be out in the corn and gone. So just the last little bit, he was kind of going up the hill and going right into that sunlight coming across there. Well, you know what that does to a scope. You know that.
About blinds you.
Yeah, it you couldn't see. And so I couldn't get a clear shot, so he went on over the hill.
We're going to stop right there and culminate the hunt when we come back from these commercial breaks. So, folks, stay with us. We'll be right back after these messages.
Calling all hunters, young and old, novice or pro. Platte has all the specialty hunting items you want and need this fall, including rifle and archery, arrows and ammo, scent killer, drags and decoys. Don't forget scopes and rangefinders. Ask TJ about custom reloading, scope mounting, and rifle sighting. Coming soon, 2-week European mount turnaround times. Wow! Buy from a professional and find it all under one roof. Stop by the Minnow Bucket, 1013 South Jeffers in North Platte. Then go hunt!
We see them out in the field working hard in the day. We see their lights in the field at night, knowing they don't stop until the harvest is complete. Acres Equipment and Subway are making it possible for those harvesters to be fed. And here's how. When you see them in the field, snap a picture and upload it to HuskerRadio.com. If your picture wins that week, Husker Radio will take Subway to the field. It's that simple. Put your phones on camera and get ready for Pick a Harvester. Brought to you by Sutherland Sportsman's Co., Remax Home Farm and Ranch, and Agland in Broken Bow.
Christmas is not that far away, and while selections are at their best, Karen at Tallman Jewelers says she'll help you lay away for Christmas. Stop in at Tallman's for pre-holiday savings on diamond earrings and pendants, engagement sets, anniversary bands, and colored stones. If you have family heirloom jewelry that you want to give as a gift with a completely new look, give Karen time to work her magic by taking it to Tallman Jewelers today. Remember, Tallman's buys used karat gold. Tallman Jewelers on the bricks at 503 North Dewey in downtown North Platte.
Hey, it's Dave Ramsey inviting you to tune into the Dave Ramsey Show on News Talk 1240 KODY. Our show provides common sense advice that works. We call it God's and Grandma's ways of handling money. Tune in for a proven plan that's worked for millions of Americans for 25 years on the air. It's the Dave Ramsey Show, weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. right here on News Talk 1240 KODY.
The quality of service from a U.S. veteran is found in our everyday freedoms. Join Custom Comfort this November in saying thank you to American veterans. Custom Comfort LLC of North Platte does it all. Electric, gas, remodel, or new. Call 539-4942.
Here's your forecast on News Talk 1240 AM and 106.1 FM. High of 44 today. Under mainly clear skies, northwesterly winds 20 to 25 miles per hour. Mainly clear skies and quiet again tonight. Lows around 21. High of 63 tomorrow. More clouds than sun Sunday. Decreasing clouds by Monday. Mid-50s Sunday. Mid-60s by Monday. Weather is brought to you by North Platte Airport with daily jet service to Denver and beyond. Book at united.com.
Back to the KODY studio for the Outdoor Connection, brought to you by TJ and the crew from the Minnow Bucket at 1013 South Jeffers in North Platte. Here's Rick Windham.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking this morning with Rogene Einspar and her story about her elk, even through a little adversity. And you'd mentioned you were in a car accident, so you weren't in the best of shape to be hunting elk, but you weren't going to give up that tag.
That's right. That's right. And my son and husband were very determined that I was going to get this elk, and they were going to do everything they possibly could. So, I mean, even if I was walking with, I had my hunting stick, you know, to put my rifle on, and my full leg brace, and so we went around the edge of the half section, and we went in kind of to a water hole, and we called again, you know. It's quite a laughing matter if you saw us getting out of the pickup, going down the side of the road there, and trying to get in behind some corn and stuff to get hidden and then do some calling. We didn't hear any answers. We didn't hear anything. So after a while, we decided to go on around the other side, and up there on the higher edge, the hill. My husband had done a few calls, and we thought we heard something. Well, then he did another call, and we could hear two elk bugling. Mm-hmm. And they were different tones of bugle, and they were in different places.
So they have a voice just like we do, and you can tell when different people are talking.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
If you're out there enough with them, you can tell.
Yeah. So I was excited. I thought, oh, maybe there's one close. And so we drove down the road to where this fence line came across the mile, you know, the other end of the half section. And my son said, well, maybe, you know, you should get out here and go over there in that weed patch, and I'll try and do a little calling. Well, here I am trying to get out of the pickup, you know, with my stick and my rifle and everything, trying to do this gracefully and quietly. And
hopefully you didn't fall at any point in time.
No, I didn't. And so we went to, my husband got out with me, and my son was going to take the pickup down the road just a little bit and park it on the driveway. And so we got out, and we hobbled over to this first weed pile, and you know, I kind of looked and I said, I don't think this is big enough. I think we need to go to the next one. And so here I am hobbling down there with my husband behind. I have my binoculars around my neck. I have my rifle over my shoulder and my stick trying to.
Why didn't anybody get a picture of this?
Well, we got just about to the second bigger weed patch, and I looked up, and there I saw him. The dark neck and head was in the shorter corn, because this was in the corner of the pivot, you know, and there
didn't get irrigated as well in lower corn, yeah.
There had been a little bit of a water hole there. It was dried up, but there had been a little bit of a water hole there, and I couldn't believe it. I poked my husband. I says, "There's an elk looking at us right there." He says, "Don't move." And so I was, in the meantime, I was sitting there and I was thinking, now what do I have to do? How far is that? What do I have to do, you know? And he pulled his very, very slowly, he pulled his binoculars up and he said, "Yeah, that's the one we saw on the other side." So I was getting my rifle up and my shooting stick up and was going to see about getting the scope on him. And my son was coming back down the road, and evidently the sound or the movement or whatever he saw, and the elk turned and started to go away. Well, he wasn't moving fast, but he was moving, and I wasn't sure about a shot there. And then my son quickly did a couple cow calls, and it was just as if it was supposed to be. He turned around and came back toward me and just looked at me there. And so Jamie says, "Take him, Mom." And so I did. I got my gun up to my shoulder, even though I'd been having therapy on it since my car accident. Got my gun up to the shoulder. You know, I had put the end on the stick and had him in my scope, and I got him.
And what distance was this?
Oh, it was between 100 and 150 yards, so okay. It wasn't bad. It's as if, you know, he saw this poor old woman and thought, "Oh, I better give up for her." No, I it was really, you know, it was supposed to be, I guess, because I had was really wanting to get an elk, but I was kind of giving up because I couldn't walk, you know. I couldn't, you know, before we had walked.
I'm just amazed that you even attempted, considering what you'd been through. That took a lot of guts just to go do that.
My son was determined that he was going to help his mom get an elk, and he did lots of calls, getting permission different places, finding out from people where maybe they had seen them and different things, and had gone with me lots of time, you know, several times. And he really wanted me to, and we had to do this between, because he works on the railroad, and so then he would be out, and then he'd be back in and different things, and so we tried to do that. But those 4 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday, we hunted each day, and that was on Thursday that I got him. And it was kind of a, you know, the first thing is you get over there, make sure he's there down, and I did. I mean, he went down with a thud, so he was down and in the corn, and we had the four-wheeler, and so we pulled him out with the four-wheeler before we did the field dressing and stuff, just to get him out in the open there. And then we took some pictures. And I have to say, my son, he had even brought a chair or a stool along, because we thought, well, if we had to set in the cornfield for a while or something, he knew that I couldn't stand for any period of time. He brought a stool along, so we got the elk kind of set up enough, positioned enough, and got the stool behind it so I could sit on the stool with my legs straight out because I couldn't get down, and we took some pictures. But no, it was exciting. And then you know, of course, starting in with the field dressing, you have to do that. And we had a trailer and four-wheeler and pickup, and so then when we go spray musk thistle, we always put one four-wheeler in the back of the pickup and one in the trailer.
Right.
But in order to get that one in the back of the pickup, we have to put a couple planks up
right.
to put the to get it up, and then it the weight of it makes the plank go down the bottom of, in the bed of the pickup. Well, how are we going to do this with this elk, pulling this elk on, you know, because he was, even after he was field dressed, he was pretty good size. And so we got the four-wheeler pulled up on the trailer, and the head of the elk up. Well, next we were going to try and have to put the four-wheeler up on the plank to go in the bed of the pickup. Well, the elk was heavy enough going up the first part to get on the trailer, and the four-wheeler, the front end kept coming up. So my son had to get up on top of the rack on top of the front of the four-wheeler and jump up and down to try to get those wheels that could not spin and not go up. And so it was kind of a circus getting it loaded, too.
We were just lucky it finally worked. Nobody got hurt doing this.
Right. So, no, it was exciting. I couldn't believe it. I was so excited. My son, my husband, we were all excited. We couldn't believe that I actually got my bull.
And this was with the 264 you were mentioning?
264 Magnum, yep. It was.
Excellent.
One shot, shot him right in the neck because he was looking right at me. So yeah. Right through the neck and out through the lungs. So.
Very good. That's a fascinating story. And you're an amazing lady to go pull this one off. This is pretty good. I like this story. So you got him home, you got him all butchered up.
We checked him in, and we hung him in our shop for a while, and I had some friends that says, well, just how big was he? Well, when you hang him up, you know.
If you've never hung an elk in, like, a regular garage won't fit him. You got to have a shop with, like, 12-foot ceilings or something.
Yeah.
They are a big animal.
Yeah. So I had a picture taken with me and the elk hanging there, but I mean he was field dressed, and we had him in ice, packed down in ice to make sure we got the meat cooled down. And I think he was like at least 10.5 feet.
Oh yeah.
You know, by then, because I looked about
a lot of good meat's gonna come out of that.
Yeah.
Now Tristan and I are always up for going and sampling any good cooking. So we would accept an invitation if you ever had one. But that is great. This has been a great story. We can't do them justice with pictures on the radio, but nice picture of the elk. And then looking back, you brought me some other pictures this morning of hunts of years gone by. And that's an awful good-looking mule deer you got there, too.
I had him mounted. He's hanging in my utility above my freezer, so I had him mounted. That's the
big. Oh, no, that one needs to be in the living room.
No, right not. And so we're going to do that European with my elk this year, the European. So.
That reminds me, I got a story I got to write about an easy way to do a European mount. I'll tell you all fair.
Oh, okay, all right.
So, anything else you'd like to ask?
No, except, you know, to have some of that filet wrapped in bacon on the pellet grill is wonderful. Is wonderful. Take some of that piece of bacon around it, put a little seasoning on it, and put that on the pellet grill.
Oh, you're a lady after my own heart. One final quick question. What would you say to any other young ladies?
By all means, if you're at all interested, or go along and do it. Yeah, do it. Our daughter was one of the first ones that did the hunter safety, and she got perfect score when she did the hunter safety when she was in, you know, grade school, high school, whenever it was they did that. And she's gone hunting, but it's been a family affair.
Very good. Well, Jean, thank you so much for coming in this morning and doing that. This is a great story. And, folks, that's it for this week. We'll see you next time on another edition of the Outdoor Connection.